Welcome to the Teach the Geek podcast, where engineer and author Neil Thompson talks with STEM professionals about public speaking, a struggle for many of us. Whether you're a novice public speaker or a proficient one, you can always pick up tips on how to improve. Here's your host, Neil Thompson.
Welcome to another edition of Teach the Geek Interviews. My name is Neil Thompson. I am the founder of Teach the Geek. I work with technical professionals so they can present more effectively, especially in front of non-technical audiences. And you can learn more about that at teachthegeek.com. Again, that's teachthegeek.com. Today, my guest is Sandro Peruzza. He is the CEO of the Ontario Society of Professional Engineers. I doubt his first job was as a CEO, though. He had probably had to work through a few jobs to get to where he is now. Plus, I think he's the first guest I've had on the channel who's majored in statistics in school. And to be very honest, I still forget what p-value actually means and the difference between a type 1 and a type 2 error. I'm not sure he'll be able to help me with that, but at least we can cover his career journey in public speaking. So welcome to Teach the Geek Interviews, Sandro.
Thank you very much. I'm really honored to be here today, Neil.
So I mentioned that you study statistics in school. What was your motivation to study that?
I kind of fell backwards into it. I actually started off with a civil engineering education. I went to University of Toronto in civil engineering, and it wasn't something I really enjoyed at the time, to be honest. So after doing that for 2 years, I worked for a year to figure out what I wanted to do. It was a very heavy program, and I wasn't willing to invest the time in completing it because, again, I wasn't passionate about it. So I had a really strong foundation in math, and I really liked McMaster. So I went to McMaster University in Hamilton, fell in love with the campus, decided to do math. And then after a second year in math, you had to, you know, decide what stream of math you're going to go into. And statistics seemed like it was a pretty good fit for me. I like to analyze things. I like to review things, and being very evidence-based, having some numbers behind the evidence was something I wanted to really understand how they did that. So statistics seemed like a natural fit. And so that's what I did.
Okay. So civil, that didn't work. Out of curiosity, what did you do during that year after you left the civil engineering program?
I worked full-time at a grocery store. I worked part-time while I was in university. So they gave me some full-time hours. And then I visited different campuses. I visited friends at different campuses, and I sat in on different classes to really understand what I wanted to do. You know, I sat on one of my friends was studying Greek mythology. So I sat in a few of those classes, and I found them very interesting, but I didn't really see myself having a career in that. So math just seemed like a natural fit for me.
Wow, that's actually really smart for you to do. And maybe now that I think about it, maybe that's something that people should do even before they start going to school in the first place. It's just sitting on various classes and see, is this something I actually want to do? I mean, a lot of times we get into these programs, and once we're there, that's our first real, I guess, introduction to what that program actually is. And it took you 2 years to figure out this isn't for me. But maybe a semester of sitting in on civil engineering classes when you were a senior in high school, you would have figured that out. Like, I don't know if I want to do this for 4 years. And then that's an excellent idea. I never even considered that. But man, maybe that's actually something that people should do. That's so unfortunate. So, but then hey, you found your way eventually. You got a degree in statistics. What was next?
Well, I did my minor in geology because I like the earth. I like to understand, you know, how we came on this planet and how this planet evolved. So I did a minor in geology, and with my, you know, engineering background, my math background, I had really high marks in geophysics. So my geophysics prof approached me about doing a master's in geophysics. Now, you can imagine at this time, I'm a little older than the average undergraduate student. So I thought about it. I said, you know, what would I do with that? He said, well, you can do prospect, and you can go, you know, out in the middle of nowhere all around the world and, you know, study rock formations and prospecting and understand what's underground. And you can be, you know, make a good career doing that. So I went back to my serious girlfriend at the time, and I said, I'm thinking of doing this. And she said, and where would you do? And I explained about how traveling all over the world and living in remote communities and in back countries and, you know, living on the land and camping. And she looked at me, she said, think again. So I went back to him. I said, no, this isn't going to work out for me. So he actually recommended an environmental management program that another professor had started up at Niagara College. So I did that and, you know, did in my environmental. I worked for an environmental company doing a site reclamation. And then after that, I went to go work for a pharmaceutical company, helping them develop their environmental management system. Got interested in occupational health and safety because it was a combined department. So went back to McMaster. They had a master's program in occupational health and environmental medicine that you can do while you're working. So I did that. And after 2 years, got that under my belt and had about a 20-year career in occupational health and safety. You know, I started off as a consultant in Niagara, moved my way up to until I was a manager, director, executive director, VP, and then finally the chief of client services. So running the entire client-facing side, which had engineers reporting into me, occupational hygienists and other professionals. And then after working for that company for 15 years, the opportunity at OSPE happened, and I'm still not sure how I managed to get there. But I remember during the interview with the board, I think in my first interview, four times they asked me, you're not a professional engineer. What makes you think you can run this organization? And I thought about it and I gave them a bunch of different answers. They brought me, I guess the answer is work, because they brought me in for the second and final interview. And, you know, at the end of the interview, they asked me one more time, says, you know, we really like you, but you're not a professional engineer and we're very hesitant to hire you. They were very blunt and honest. And that's what I love about engineers is, you know, they are very blunt and honest. So I said, you know, we're an association, or the Ontario Society of Professional Engineers is an association. You don't need someone who's an engineer running the association. You need someone running the association that can explain to government and to the media the important work that engineers do. And you also need the work, someone who can explain. We had a number of different advocacy committees who developed policy or policy recommendations, and we had to go pitch those to government. I said, you know, there aren't, especially in Ontario, I think there's one MPP in Ontario who's a professional engineer out of, I think, 165. So there aren't any engineers who work for the government or in government at the policy level. So you need someone who can translate these technical engineering reports to the layperson. So I can be your translator. And I understand engineering because I did 2 years of it. And I understand science and math and statistics and analysis. And I can put that in a plain language so that I can make your policy recommendations more palatable to politicians. And I guess that worked for them. They bought that pitch and I got the job.
That was a great pitch, man. If I was on the committee, you were getting the job too. No, to be all in all honesty, Sandra, I think you're absolutely right. And not only that, but you know, for a lot of us people who actually did do engineering and became engineers, speaking in front of people isn't our strong suit. I mean, I started this whole podcast based on my own struggles giving presentations in front of people. And that was just in front of management at the company that I was at. I can't imagine giving presentations in front of, you know, people in government and these high ranking people in government. That would have been just nerve wracking. So we definitely needed somebody who was comfortable doing that. And if it happened to be an engineer, fine. But if there's somebody that wasn't an engineer, but that was willing to do that work as well, then that's fine too. They just have to be an advocate for the association and just, you know, be that person that tells the government the important work that we're doing. And if it, as I've said, if it wasn't an engineer and that person was still willing and was adept and skilled at doing that work, then the fact that they aren't an engineer shouldn't have mattered.
Yeah, it was, I mean, even after they gave me the job, I think there was some hesitancy, but I'll tell you another story. And I find storytelling is a great way to kind of share experiences and to demonstrate some of the messages, the key messages of why we say certain things. So, you know, one of my board of directors, and he was the head energy policy person on our committee, we're going in and meeting with the Minister of Energy. And the Minister of Energy was very knowledgeable of the files. He'd been in that role first as a critic and then as a minister for about 10 years. So we had gone in and talked to him about something, and my board director chair, his name was Paul. So Paul was going in and talking to the minister and says, "Minister, this is what we need to do, and here's why." And he was explaining it. And the minister's nodding and the minister's nodding. He said, Paul, goes, "How many years have I known you?" He said, "About 10 years. He goes, "Exactly." He goes, "Now, I've been in this file for how long?" He said, "About 10 years. He said, "Exactly. So everything you've told me, and I've been in this file, I've been here for about 10 years, and I understand only half of what you're telling me. And even the half of what you've told me, when I go back to my caucus and explain to my caucus, this is a policy direction we need to take, I can only explain half of what you told me, of what I understand. So that's only 25% of what you've told me I can explain to caucus. And then once I get back to my constituents, I don't even know how to talk to them about this." So I said, "Well, Minister, can I give you an analogy?" He said, "Sure." So I kind of came up with an analogy. And I said, "And this is what Paul's trying to tell you." And then at the end, he's nodding. He said, "Now that I can understand." And he said to Paul, he says, "Why didn't you say that?" And Paul said, I did. He said, "Yeah, but he said it in English," right? So that was the message. And I looked at Paul and we laughed, and he was so frustrated after. He says, "I don't understand. You and I said the exact same things." And I said, "Well, it wasn't the exact same thing, but I explained it about not, you know," Paul really focused on the technical aspects of our report. And he wanted to demonstrate to the minister all the analysis we went behind it, all the engineering behind that, so that if the minister was being challenged by his technical staff within the ministry, he can talk to it and then refer them to OSPI. And I said, "That's later down in the pipeline. The first thing when you're pitching an idea is you're selling the idea. You got to sell it. And when you're selling it, you have to talk about what's important to him. For him, he has explained it to his colleagues, and his colleagues aren't engineers. So that's, you know, the idea. And really, when you're talking to your group and public speaking, who's your audience? You really have to understand your audience. And then you have to tailor your message to your audience. And, you know, if you're talking, you know, when we're talking to the policy people, we're talking at a very high level. When we finally get to the bureaucrats and the people whose job it is to implement the policy, that's when you can really talk technical. And you're talking to the actual geeks. So now you can, you know, geek it out and talk about all the engineering and all the analysis that went in and who was on the committee and so forth and so on. So, you know, I think that's a key.
On 100%, Sandro. And it's a good thing that you were there. And it wasn't just your colleague, Paul, that was the one talking to the Minister of Energy, or else that you might have had a very different outcome. Well, you mentioned that you used an analogy to help the minister understand what exactly Paul was saying. I think that was smart, because oftentimes, you know, us engineers, we have this technical expertise and we just expect people to understand what we're saying. And we don't have enough empathy for the people that we're talking to for us to understand that they don't have the same level of expertise that we do. But not only that, we didn't always have the same level of expertise that we have. So you can go back 20 years, maybe before you were an engineer, and if someone was explaining to you what you're explaining to someone now, would you understand? And oftentimes the answer is no. So what makes you think that this other person who doesn't have the same background as you will understand you? But I think a lot of times we don't look at it that way. And then we get these instances where your colleague was thinking, I said exactly what Sandro said. It's like, nah, man, you didn't say it in a way that the person that you were speaking to can actually understand. And oftentimes when you're talking to these decision makers, if they don't understand, the answer is no.
Yeah, exactly. And I, you know, we do at OSPI now, we do a lot of training for engineering companies on communications. And, you know, we go in and we talk about all this technical training we can do on, you know, whether it's programming in Python or talking about how do you go switch electrical grids and how do you electrify electrical grids. And they're looking and they're nodding and said, "Great, because can you have a course where you can teach my engineers to talk to my finance people and talk to my engineers and how to talk to the marketing people?" And thing, you know, the world of engineering has changed, and how engineering is done has changed. We did an event to celebrate the 40th anniversary of the CN Tower in Toronto. And we had, you know, four of the original designers there, all men who were in their 80s, and they talked about how they designed the CN Tower and the bolts and the pulleys and everything, and how it's structurally sound. It is as structurally sound back then, this was about 5 years ago, as it was the day it was built, which is an amazing engineering achievement. But when they were talking about how they designed this thing, it was basically them designing it on their own at their bench. And they all had their each component, and they designed each component, and then they brought it together and they saw how everything fit together. Now that doesn't happen. Now you have teams working on this, where you have teams working on bolts, you have teams working on cables and so forth. And then, you know, on that, you have engineers, you have technologists, but then you have the marketing people, because the marketing people have to go sell this to the client. And so forth and so on. So, and the finance people, because they got to, you know, talk about budgeting for these projects. And if engineers can't talk to the financial implications and the costs and the savings and return on investment, they're not going to get that idea that they have to fruition, because first they have to, before you can sell it outwardly, you have to sell it inwardly on your teams.
Yeah, 100%. Can you imagine if what is now was then, and you had these engineers that were adept at talking to the finance people, the marketing people, then there very well may not be a CN Tower at all. And that wouldn't that be a shame for the city? Or just absolutely.
Exactly.
So, you know, Sandro, when I first started this podcast, I mentioned that it was based on my own struggles having to give presentations in front of management. And I got a lot better at it because, well, what ended up happening is my project got canceled. And this happened maybe 15 years ago. And I still believe, if I was just better at giving presentations or just talking to these people in a way that they could understand, maybe I could have saved the project. But that certainly was my wake-up call. At what point did you realize that being adept at giving presentations could be of use to you?
Oh, it was all, I owe it all to my career in occupational health and safety and consulting in that space. Because, you know, I make a joke that if you can sell occupational health and safety services to a company who didn't have, you know, an order from the Ministry of Labor, but you can sell to anybody. Because when you're talking about occupational health and safety services and making a workplace safer, what are you selling? You're selling a non-event, right? Now, I'm going to come in, you're going to spend all this time and money and resources with me, and at the end of this whole process, nothing is going to happen, right? Because that's what you're selling. And they're like, well, what do I get? It's not like I get something tangible. No, I'm selling you nothing. I'm going to sell you something so that, you know, your operations continue. But, and I realized going and selling nothing is not a great sales pitch. So I had to understand what was important to them. And, you know, and again, when you're talking to someone and you're always selling, and you know, it's always, you're always selling something. You're selling an idea, you're selling a concept. So, you know, might not be that you're selling a headphone or something physical and it's a transaction of money. You're selling an idea, and what you're hoping the client will buy is buy-in. They buy into your vision. They buy into your idea. They buy into the concept you're trying to pass along more than it is the physical thing. So, you know, I stutter, I try to find the right words sometimes. So I'm not one of these really adept speakers, but really communication isn't about you being smooth. I found that, and what my clients told me is because I struggled to find the right words, I wasn't one of these adept speakers and really smooth and flawless, that it actually built trust with them. They realized that I wasn't a slick salesperson. I was this person who was really understanding what they were all about, what their company was all about. And I was trying to find the right fit for them. So a lot of communication is listening and listening to the client, asking open-ended questions and saying, oh, tell me what is important to you. Show me around your place. And, you know, looking as well. So a lot of communication is with your eyes. It's with your body language. So, you know, nodding with the person. And I just built this over time, and you know, I was horrible early on in putting me in front of a crowd. I still get nervous, right? But now I just have to have that self-confidence of, you know, I've prepared, and preparation is a huge part, right? You've heard that old saying, those who fail to prepare to fail. So understand the material, understand the client, find the right message and then practice it a few times. I'm not, you know, if you have a 1 hour presentation, I'm not saying you spend, you know, 3 days preparing for that, you know, 3 days of or 48 hours continuously preparing for that. But a few times in those 3 days before, just go through the material, make sure you're comfortable with it. And my staff used to prepare speeches for me, and I'm terrible at reading speeches, absolutely horrible at reading speeches. So now what they've done is they just key points. And I look at the key points and I make sure that as I'm talking to the audience, I'm incorporating those key points. And then I have those and I'll put a little notation of, oh, don't forget this story. Don't forget this story. Because storytelling to me is a very important aspect. It's something people can relate to, right? And it's less talking at them and more talking with them through storytelling.
100%. I mean, this is really good, Sandro. And the idea of storytelling, even giving presentations in front of non-technical audiences as a technical person, is something that I didn't even think was appropriate at first. But once I started doing it, I realized how useful and effective it is in having these people actually listen to what you have to say. If you just talk to them in terms of the data and you're showing them a bunch of charts and tables and using a bunch of jargon, maybe they don't understand. It's going to be very difficult to keep their attention. But if you use stories, it's really helpful. And when you're a kid, maybe your mom or dad read you a story before you went to bed and you loved it. But we get away from that for some reason once we become adults. And I just think storytelling doesn't have a place in these type of presentations, but it can make all the difference. And I really like what you said about talking to points as opposed to reading presentations or reading speeches. It's really difficult to engage people when you're reading because you're looking, I'm sure you're looking down at whatever you're reading. You're not looking at the audience. So and you're not looking at me. Well, damn it, I ain't looking at you. I'll look at my phone. I can look at other places too.
It's true. It's true. They can tell when you're reading, and it's not authentic, right? It's not authentic. It's not engaging. So, I'm going to pick up on another point you talked about, and that is, using graphs and charts and all that other stuff. Again, my background was statistics originally, so I was throw up a bunch of numbers, a bunch of statistics, and you'll sell them that way. No, you can argue over numbers, right? So it's not, don't overwhelm them with numbers. Don't overwhelm them with statistics. Use the technical information to support your story. Your technical information isn't your story. Your technical information should be supporting your story. So when you're going through and saying, and here's why, then throw up the stat to say, to support the why. When you're saying, and here's, some other analysis you did, then throw up it to explain the other analysis to support your point. So make sure you have, your story, and then look at, okay, what information do I have that can support my story? And then go back to it if, after you've had the conversation and they want more clarification, have the additional stuff in the background, right? So it's like, oh, that's a really good question. You asked about this. I wasn't ready to talk about it, but you know what? I have that graph. Hold on. Let me pull up the chart. And you can do that. So don't overwhelm them with the data. Use the data to support the story.
Yeah, I firmly agree with you, Sandro, that using the technical data to support what the story is, because people will follow the story, but if you leave out the story and just have the technical data, and again, these people don't have the same technical expertise as you do, they'll have difficulty following the data. There's only so much new information that you can take in all at once. And if, especially if it's information that's completely outside of your field of expertise, you got to drip that into people. You can't just water hose them with a whole bunch of data and say, okay, you'll understand, right? It's like, no, I don't understand at all. Just like the minister said, I got maybe half of what you talked about, man. And yeah. I'm going to go back to the people I need to talk to, and then the constituents, and they're going to probably get half of that. So by the time we're done, the end person maybe got, half of a half of a half. Yeah. What's the point of this whole damn conversation?
Exactly. And you're lucky if the person you're talking to admits they don't understand what you're talking about, right? That again, we've known, Paul knew this minister for 10 years. So they had a relationship. Imagine if it was a brand new minister who it was your first time meeting with them. And they're not going to admit they don't know what you're talking about, because you're talking about the energy file and how do we decarbonize the grid and all this other stuff. They're not going to admit they don't know what you're talking about. So they're going to say, oh, thank you very much. This was really informative. And then you leave and they'll look at the colleague next to them. Do you understand what they said? No. Did you? No. I go, okay, thanks. And then you're done. You never hear back from them.
I think you're one. I think you're absolutely right about that. It's, especially, yeah, you know, like I'm the Minister of Energy. Of course, I'm supposed to understand what this man was talking about. So I'm definitely not going to admit if I don't. You're right, because they had that 10-year relationship. He was comfortable enough to admit that. But you're right. If he was just a new person, but yes, this is my portfolio. I know exactly what he's talking about. Use all the terms. Use all the jargon. I see all the tables, all the graphs. I understand all of that. And then you leave. It's just like, I have no clue what that man is talking about. I don't know what we're going to do. I got to do something, though. I'm trying to keep this job. You know what I'm saying? This is wonderful. Hey, Sandro, so if for the people who are listening or watching this conversation and they want to get better at giving presentations or public speaking in general, what would your number one tip be?
Practice, practice, practice. You know, you're going to, don't be afraid. Rely on your confidence, right? If someone's asking you to speak on a topic, it's because they know that you know the material. So you don't have to worry about getting up there and saying, what if I, you know, what if someone thinks I'm an idiot? No one's going to think you're an idiot, right? You're a professional engineer. They know technically you know the material. So, you know, have that confidence and I know this stuff. So now it's prepare. Who am I going to speak into? That's the first thing. Know your audience. And it's a key thing with anything. If you're developing a product, know your audience. So that's the first thing, is know your audience. And then what are the key messages I want my audience to understand? Right? What's the pitch? What's the sales pitch? And once you understand who the audience is and what the key messages are, how do I say this so that they understand? Right? And those are the three things. And so do I do that through storytelling? Absolutely. And what materials do I need to support that story? You know, what evidence do I need to support that story? And have a conversation, right? Engage the audience. You can have a conversation by speaking all at once, by, you know, pointing things out to the audience and saying, you know, how many of you by show of hands do this? You know, and people put up their hand. Well, they feel engaged now. Right? Or how many people have thought about this? Think of it. And you can see people in the audience doing this. Those are ways to engage the audience. So that's, you know, and then just I'll go back to, you know, how do you get to Broadway? Practice, practice, practice. How do you get in front of a group? Practice, practice, practice. And if things don't go well, and they won't sometimes, that's fantastic. You know why? Because you can then go back and say, why didn't that go well? Because I did this, because I did this, because I did this. No problem. I'll fix that for next time.
Right? Well, that makes perfect sense. I'm a big fan of practicing before I give presentations. And the reason I do it is to make sure that I present the information I want in the order in which I want to present it. Because oftentimes if you don't practice and you do it off the cuff, it comes out as it comes out. And it may not come out in the best way for the people that you're talking to, for them to understand. I have a friend who gives me a hard time. I've mentioned this on the podcast before. He gives me a hard time about practicing my presentations. He does a lot of his presentations off the cuff, and you definitely notice the difference, because it kind of comes out just as a stream of consciousness. And sometimes it's difficult to really follow what he's saying, but at least with me, I'm hitting this point first, and then this one, and then this one in this particular order. So it's not, point two will never be point one. Point two will be point two. Every time. And I practice it to make sure that point two is point two, and I don't forget point one, and I make sure I mention point three. It's essentially, I make it so that I remember to say everything that I want to say in the order in which I want to say it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You have to have a plan, right? You have a game plan. So stick to your game plan.
No doubt. So this has been a great conversation, Sandro. Thank you so much for being a guest. How can people get in touch with you?
Sure. Best way is email. So it's S Peruzza, so SPERRUZZA at ospe.on.ca. I'm also active on LinkedIn. So, you know, look up Sandro Peruzza, CEO of the Ontario Society of Professional Engineers on LinkedIn, and Twitter. and I'm OSPE_CEO.
All right. Well, everyone, that marks the end of another edition of Teach the Geek Interviews. My name is Neil Thompson. I'm the founder of Teach the Geek, and you can learn more about it at teachthegeek.com. Again, that's teachthegeek.com. Until next time, take care and stay safe. Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you.
Well, everyone, that marks another episode in the can. I hope you enjoyed it. If you like these episodes and want to support Teach the Geek, please subscribe, share, and like on any of your favorite podcast platforms, or on all of them. Also, if you prefer to watch the episodes, head on over to the YouTube channel at youtube.teachthegeek.com. Until next time.